That is the sound you never want to hear. It is the sound of a warning siren going off at a nuclear power plant. But whether you can hear that sound or not, we are all in the nuclear hot seat. Welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat, the weekly podcast keeping you up to date on all things anti-nuclear. My name is Libby Halevy. I'm the producer and host, as well as a survivor of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island. This week is Thanksgiving, so we're checking in with a whole bunch of activists to find out what they're grateful for this year. The responses are wide-ranging, wildly different, and give a great snapshot of our victories and positive vision for where the movement for a nuclear-free future is going, along with what a complete and total victory actually sounds like. That will be coming up in just a few minutes. Today is Tuesday, November 20th, 2012, and here is the week's nuclear news. In Southern California, an important victory for California coastal communities. The California Coastal Commission voted unanimously to deny the Pacific Gas and Electric Company's plan to do high-decibel sonic blasting off the coast of the Diablo Canyon nuclear facility. The vote took place after nearly 4 hours of public presentations, all of which were in opposition and came from environmentalists, local cities, local counties, anti-nuclear activists, and the Chumash people, who have resided in the area for thousands of years. The impacts for this proposal are tremendously important. In ex parte discussions that the commissioners had with PG&E, the utility stated that they had no intention of ever closing the reactors, even if the tests showed that the faults in the area came out to be larger than the facility was capable of withstanding. The same $64 million tests that have also been okayed off the coast of San Onofre now also come into doubt, as the Coastal Commission has clearly indicated that such invasive tests would impact the state's newly protected marine areas. The company that wants to mine uranium in Virginia is supporting a bill in the upcoming General Assembly calling for regulations to govern the proposed mining, according to lobbyists for Virginia Uranium. The move is widely seen by environmentalists and others as a way to authorize the mining while avoiding a vote on the controversial project. Whit Clement, one of 19 lobbyists, employed by Virginia Uranium, told a closed-door meeting of Virginia business leaders in Williamsburg last month that the company is working on legislation that would authorize state agencies to draft regulations to govern mining rather than voting directly on the project. According to Robert Burnley, president of Strategic Environmental Advice in Richmond, a consulting firm working with mine opponents, it's a de facto lifting of the ban. Once the regulations are in place, mining can commence. To learn what uranium mining does to the health and well-being of people who live near the mines, check out Nuclear Hot Seat number 74 from November 13, 2012. It is an interview with Marius and Candace Paul on the impact of uranium mining on native lands and native peoples in northern Saskatchewan. Bloomberg Businessweek is reporting that Chicago-based nuclear giant Exelon Corporation is considering permanently closing its Oyster Creek nuclear power station before the current 2019 decommissioning date. Oyster Creek is the first GE Mark I boiling reactor to operate in the world, and its unit is identical to the destroyed units at Fukushima Daiichi. During Superstorm Sandy, Oyster Creek was hit with ocean surges of 7.4 feet, higher than the 7 feet it is built to withstand, and the plant's danger rating from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission rose to alert level, number 2 on the NRC's 4-level warning scale. According to nuclear consultant Arnie Gunderson of Fairwinds Energy Education, if the facility had been online instead of in a refueling mode at the time of the storm, we would have been facing Fukushima, USA, in New Jersey. Yes, Exelon, shut it down. Now. Last week, Nuclear Hot Seat reported that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission had canceled a planned public meeting over Pacific Gas and Electric's proposal to restart the damaged San Onofre nuclear power plant. Last week, Nuclear Hot Seat blamed the NRC as the likely culprit, but it turns out we freaked out the hotel, and they're the ones who are responsible.
The DoubleTree Hotel was concerned that the meeting might be disruptive to their other guests and declined to host the meeting, according to NRC spokesman Victor Drix. But DoubleTree's general manager, Rob Koselnik, later revised his comments to state that upon reviewing an estimate of the attendance of the meeting, around 500, and the size of the ballroom where it would be held, the hotel decided the gathering would exceed its capacity. In another Southern California San Onofre development, the city of Vista has called for expanded evacuation zone in San Onofre and sent a letter to the NRC. This is part of an ongoing campaign to get local cities near the shuttered reactors to take a stand on this critical issue. Representatives from a number of activist groups attended the city council meeting, including San Clemente Green, Residents Organized for a Safe Environment, and San Onofre Safety. On November 12th, the mayor of Vista sent a letter to the NRC with copies to Representative Daryl Issa and Senators Feinstein and Boxer. The letter included a call for the NRC to expand San Onofre's emergency planning zone from 10 miles to 50 miles, called on the NRC to implement the agency's Fukushima Lessons Learned Task Force's proposed changes as soon as possible, and called for a reanalysis of whether San Onofre can withstand the maximum credible tsunami and earthquake. Here's really reassuring news coming from The Big Picture with Tom Hartman. The U.S. is importing food from Japan that is considered unfit to eat over there. According to Kevin Camps of Beyond Nuclear, the difference between Japan and the United States is kind of startling. In Japan, at this point, the permissible level of radioactivity in food is 100 becquerels per kilogram. In the United States, the permissible level is 1,200 becquerels per kilogram. So Japan's limits are 12 times stronger than ours, which means that we could very certainly be importing food from Japan that's considered unfit to eat there because it's contaminated with radioactivity. No sushi for us. This story from the Japan Times. Experts warn that Japan's second largest lake, with a surface area of 220 square kilometers, is quietly but steadfastly accumulating radioactive cesium. Lake Kasumigaura in Ibaraki Prefecture, only 60 miles northeast of Tokyo, is not only rich with fishery resources, but the water is used for irrigation, industrial purposes, and even for consumption as drinking water for 960,000 people in Ibaraki Prefecture. Furthermore, no one knows how and by how much the problem has worsened over the months, except for one obvious fact. It hasn't gone away. The former director of the government-affiliated Ibaraki Freshwater Fisheries Research Institute maintains that the inevitable solution would be to release Kasumigaura's cesium into the Pacific Ocean via the Tone River. The problem has been labeled a potential disaster waiting to happen. Here is the Numbnuts of the Week award, and it is beyond comprehension. The Japan Nuclear Safety Institute, JANSI, has been launched to improve the safety of Japan's nuclear industry by, wait for it, sharing operational experience and safety knowledge among the country's nuclear companies. The new body represents an evolution of cooperation in nuclear safety that started after the 1999 Tokai criticality accident. At that time, electric power companies, along with enterprises involved with the nuclear industry, established the Nuclear Safety Network. The network's main activities were to enhance the safety culture of the nuclear industry, conduct peer reviews, and disseminate information about nuclear industry. According to Makoto Yagi, who is chairman of the Federation of Electric Power Companies, and this is a direct quote, "Based on lessons learned from insufficient efforts in the past, and with a renewed commitment to make ongoing improvements, we will constantly strive to achieve the world's highest level of nuclear safety." Dude, you've already blown it in the opposite direction. You are sitting on the worst nuclear disaster the world has ever seen. It's beyond Chernobyl. going after nuclear safety right now through cooperation and enhancing your safety culture, having peer reviews and disseminating information. Dude, get a grip. Meanwhile, there has been a small victory in Osaka City. At a meeting of the Public Welfare and Health Committee in Osaka City, Japan, an assemblywoman submitted a motion to suspend the test burn of disaster debris from Iwate and continue to study the health effect from the debris burning. Quite unexpectedly, the motion passed. Concerned citizens have tirelessly been campaigning against the debris burn in their city. They've been calling bureaucrats and officials everywhere and visiting them to talk in person. They'd almost given up and were stunned to learn of this sudden turn of events. It's still unclear what will happen. One political party is saying the burn will be stopped, while another is not so sure. Ultimately, if the mayor wants to do it, he will just do it. As far as they know, the test burn may be put on hold until January at least. Meanwhile, no one knows what will happen to the container ship containing radioactive rubble en route from Iwate to Osaka. And finally, this story out of Switzerland. An alliance of environmental groups, political parties, anti-nuclear organizations, and trade unions, including the Green Party and Greenpeace Switzerland, has collected 125,000 signatures in support of a people's initiative that would require caps on the lifetime of existing nuclear power plants in Switzerland and a ban on construction of new ones. Although the Swiss cabinet committed in 2011 to a phase-out of nuclear power, it has not set a binding deadline. This initiative, if passed by the people in a nationwide vote, would require the closing of Bezhnau 1, Switzerland's oldest nuclear power plant, within 1 year of the vote. The lifetimes of the other four plants would be limited to 45 years, meaning that the newest plant in Liebstadt would be closed by 2029. Most of the time, fighting the nuclear juggernaut feels like an extended game of whack-a-mole. You know, that carnival arcade game where you smack a pop-up mole on the head to knock it back down in its hole, only to have two more show up, and when you've taken care of those, four more, and on, more and more, until you can't get rid of them and they overrun your best efforts. That's what it feels like with the nuke industry. They've got money, resources, lobbyists, PR flax, evil geniuses, and the psychosis to keep coming up with ever-expanding ways to put their agenda across on an unsuspecting world. It's enough to drive us crazy, exhaust us, or lead us to despair when we're working against them. Yet, there is plenty to be thankful for within our movement. To find out what anti-nuclear activists feel grateful for this holiday season, I called up a random sampling and asked. What follows is in no way meant to be all-inclusive. It's just an audio montage of the people who called me back in time. Give a listen to this mosaic of hope and healing for a nuclear-free future.
I'm Carl Grossman, and I host a TV program called Enviro Close-Up, and we regularly focus on nuclear issues on the program and in documentaries. And as to Thanksgiving 2012, on the nuclear issue, things to be very thankful for, I would say, number one, how Germany is just showing the world that nuclear, besides being dangerous and dirty and expensive, is thoroughly unnecessary. In the wake of Fukushima, and through democracy, this is a reflection of votes in Germany, Germany decided to just dump its nuclear program, to close the nuclear plants in the nation, and to embark on solar and wind and other safe, clean energy technologies, and it's been doing it. It's been wonderful what's occurring and how Germany has made such inroads in having its energy come from safe sources. Secondly, I'd say the rejection by an NRC panel of a third nuclear plant at Calvert Cliffs in Maryland, really just outside of Washington, D.C., this nation's capital. Very, very important. That NRC panel rejected it because, well, a lot of environmental safe energy groups got together in a legal challenge, pointing out that the company building this would-be third nuke, Calvert Cliffs, is dominated by French interests, and that's a violation of the Atomic Energy Act, and it's been rejected, the third nuke. However, the full Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is often a nuclear rubber stamp commission, could reverse what its panel did. And third to be thankful for is that Barack Obama has not used the word nuclear in recent months. During his the earlier part of his first term, he was forever talking about clean energy and somehow lumping nuclear in with that. But in the wake of Fukushima, he seems to, I don't know if he's gotten the point yet. I mean, he's been quite bamboozled by his energy secretary, Stephen Chu, and neutralized, it would seem. Because originally he was an anti-nuclear person by nuclear interests. But nevertheless, in recent times, he doesn't mention the word nuclear. He talks about clean energy. I fear that he might still not be saying nuclear, but still considering nuclear under clean energy. But the fact that he's not explicitly promoting nuclear, that's an advance and something to be thankful for. And if the pressure can be continued on Obama, maybe truly he'll see the light.
My name is Donna Gilmore. I manage the StanonOfreeSafety.org website, which is a website designed to be an educational and organizational tool for actives and just regular concerned citizens. It's used to educate other people on the key issues. It has handouts and only fact-based sourced information. One of the things I'm grateful for is the website has become very popular with the local activists and citizens. They're sharing it with senior groups. They're sharing it with their city council people. They're busting the myths of Edison and the nuclear industry with the information on the website. So I've been very happy with the success of that tool. One of the other things I'm happy about is that our movement is growing exponentially. As the word gets passed around, those people are telling other people. We have city councils that are coming on board, writing letters to their senators, the governor, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, a lot more media attention. So everything's moving in the right direction. We've got Friends of the Earth has joined our movement and is being a tremendous help, helping us try and keep San Onofre shut down. And then recently, I attended the Coastal Commission meeting in Santa Monica. And I wish every regulatory agency could be like the Coastal Commission. They recognize the emperor has no clothes. The earthquake risks in California are already putting us in jeopardy with those nuclear plants, and they recognize that. The seismic test that PG&E wants to do and San Onofre wants to do that would kill marine life, they said there's absolutely no justification for it. And then they came out on a personal note, not all of them, but most of them, and says, we don't need nuclear power in California. So that was great. And there were hundreds and hundreds of people there, very intelligent, smart people. One of the Coastal Commission members said, I can't believe how educated and eloquent the people are here that are speaking on this issue. So we're going in the right direction, so that's very encouraging. And I'm meeting a lot of really great people along the way. So that's what I'm grateful for.
Hello, Libby. I'm so happy that you asked me to speak today on behalf of myself and Coalition Against Nukes. We're a Facebook group and also we're a website, www.coalitionagainstnukes.org. And specifically, I'd like to give my thanks to everyone, first and foremost, that did come to the Cannes rally in D.C., because this is the best way I know how that everyone hears my giving thanks to them for coming. I know it was a big struggle for a lot of people financially, and my heart goes out to anyone that had hardships to do that, but it was a wonderful affair, a wonderful event, and it's what we're doing. We're getting together, and Libby is one of the best gatherers of all of us, and I want to thank you specifically, Libby, for doing this and bringing around nuclear hot seat so that all of us get a chance to speak, give our thoughts on what's going on, as well as you're having leading experts. We couldn't do it without people like you. We are trying to do the best we can to organize a national movement and keep it alive, and I think we're succeeding. And I want to give thanks to that synergistic energy, because that's what we wanted and why we put our efforts into this. And it's all pro bono work, and I think we're really making a big change. So I want to thank everyone that's a part of this, and all my sweetest thoughts with you at this time this year.
Hi, this is Sean Bonner from Safecast. You can find us online at safecast.org. This year, I'm thankful that people have taken an interest in their environments and surroundings and are getting active and involved and are no longer willing to just sit by and let companies and governments control everything around them. They can actually have a hand in it themselves.
This is Barbara George, and my group is Women's Energy Matters. We are watchdogs of the California Public Utilities Commission, and we were working on replacing San Onofre with clean energy. San Onofre nuke has been down since January, so I'm grateful for that. And I also am grateful, this may sound a little strange, but I just rearranged my house. I got a few new things or new used things, and I made these massive changes in where everything is, and it has unleashed the most amazing energy, because I've been thinking about it for a while, and I'm like, I really, really need that to be over there, and this is too high, and it doesn't feel good on my neck, and blah, blah, blah. And anyway, I was just thinking how this is related to the way I feel about changing to clean energy. We are tired of these old and decrepit nuclear power plants, as well as the old and decrepit gas plants and coal and all of those dirty things that are of the past and don't fit us anymore. And we just totally need to rearrange our energy furniture and have some new thoughts. And I just feel good about the moment that we're in, where we pretty much have to do it, but we also have this great opportunity of doing something that's brand new and rearranging the pieces that we already have so that we can move to a clean energy world. So I'm grateful for that.
My name's Lou Zeller. I'm the executive director with the Blue Ridge Environmental Defense League. We're grateful today for the activities coming from the communities living around existing nuclear power plants. For example, we have the Waynesboro to Washington Watch has been traveling all night long, beginning Sunday night, and they arrived early this morning at the Federal Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C. This is a caravan which is organized by residents living near Plant Vogtle in Burke County, Georgia, one of the poorest counties east of the Mississippi. Plant Vogtle is a nuclear power station, has operated there for 20 years and wants to expand with two more reactors. The residents there are bearing silent witness to the injustice of the power plant in their backyard, the danger to the public, the escalating cost of nuclear power, and the failure of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to heed its own experts following last year's nuclear meltdown in Japan. Like I said, went from Waynesboro to Washington. My colleague, Reverend Charles Utley, just came out of the courtroom this morning. He said the things went well. He thought the judges were hearing the arguments and questioning the federal officials at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, holding the attorney's feet to the fire on that. We'll see how that goes. But what we want there is something different to happen in terms of the first nuclear power plant license issued in the United States in decades, and the implications for all this whole new push for nuclear power plants in the United States. Of course, the Westinghouse reactor, the so-called AP1000, is the design selected for over a dozen plants in the United States. So this case also challenges the soundness of that reactor, particularly in light of the disaster in Japan. We're still finding out about things there. Not enough has happened there, but we're grateful that we had this opportunity here today for the judges to hear our case.
Hi, my name is Kim Roberson, and I'm founder of Fukushima Fallout Awareness Network. I wrote Silence Deafening, Fukushima Fallout, A Mother's Response. I work a lot on the food issues around radioactive fallout from Fukushima. And I am grateful for the food we eat, the air we breathe, the water we drink, for healthy friends and family, I'm very grateful to Libby Halevi for doing such a wonderful and consistent service with the Nuclear Hot Seat podcast. And I'm grateful for every single person that has been working on this issue, on the nuclear safety issue across the board, on how we can transition from nukes to safe renewables as soon as possible. And I'm very thankful for the Internet, because without the Internet, none of the work that I've been doing could be possible, and I wouldn't know all of you. My website is silencedeafening.com. I'll spell that out, SilenceDeafening.com. There is a link to FAN, Fukushima Fallout Awareness Network, on that website. FAN will be getting a new website in the new year. So thank you so much, and thanks for doing this, Libby.
This is Gene Stone from Residents Organized for a Safe Environment. I'm grateful this season that the public is starting to listen to our arguments and becoming aware of the problems that we all face with nuclear power. I'm also grateful that the city councils around California are taking notice and beginning to wonder how nuclear power will affect their communities if there's a problem. It appears that we are having some success with communicating with the commissioners of the NRC, and that's a good sign to be able to discuss these important issues with the powers that be.
Hi, I'm Alice Slater, and I'm with Abolition 2000, a global network working for the elimination of nuclear weapons and nuclear power. And it's at www.abolition2000.org, and I'm incredibly grateful this year that we shut down a nuclear power plant in Wisconsin, the Kewaunee Nuclear Power Plant, and nuclear power is on its way out. It's a dinosaur, and we're going to move to a green energy economy. I'm also exceedingly grateful for Operation Sandy, which is the Occupy Wall Street group, has come out after this horrendous hurricane, really strong, and been an incredible moving force in New York City, helping people during this awful disaster we were struck with, and opening up a whole new conversation on climate change, so that I think we're finally going to face up to it. I'm also exceedingly grateful that the last election showed that we're in the last gasp of the patriarchy, that other people are moving forward and taking control of the government and making choices for who's going to run our government. And I just hope that we can organize it appropriately and make sure that we take the bombs and the weapons away and the corporate marauding and have the people winning now that we're getting that white patriarchy out of the way.
My name is Michael Leonardi, and I'm with the Coalition Against Nukes. You can visit our website at coalitionagainstnukes.org. I'm thankful for a lot of things this Thanksgiving period. I'm thankful for a lot of developments we've seen with anti-nuclear movement here in the United States over the last year. I'm thankful that I was able to meet in person the host of this show, Libby Halevi, in Washington, D.C., with a lot of other wonderful people that are working really hard on this issue and other issues across the country to expose the reality of what we're facing here in the United States and around the world with our energy choices and nuclear power at the forefront of these energy choices. I'm really thankful that we've been able to come together and develop strong bonds that are really laying the groundwork for raising mass consciousness and getting a movement together where we can really start challenging the political forces out there that aren't listening to us, that haven't been listening to us, that are endangering us every day by the continued operation of the nuclear power plants here in this country and the other dirty energy choices they're making, leading to the increase in greenhouse gases and climate change disasters. So I'm really thankful that we've come together, built this network, and are continuing to move forward together into the next year and beyond. And I see so much potential and reason for optimism.
My name is Greg Panzeca, and I'm executive director of a nonprofit group called PeaceNIC, which is to promote peace through education, poverty reduction, environmental protections, and social justice. I'm also a member of a band I formed called The Insurgency, which is a political activist rock band, and we do many shows to raise money for various charities. and I am very grateful for having my band and having Michael Leonardi call me and invite us down to Toledo to play at a anti-nuclear rally a year and a half ago. That's how I was able to hook up with the Coalition Against Nukes. I'm very grateful for the founder, Priscilla Starr, for starting this up, and also for Michael Leonardi for introducing me to everyone. I am also very grateful for the whole movement, the Coalition Against Nukes, that I'm currently in. Now I've really become empowered, and I'm very passionate about going forward with the anti-nuke movement. So I've been going to many different seminars and conferences, and I've been trying to teach myself what's going on in the nuclear industry, especially with Fukushima now. That's really what woke me up. So I'm trying to put together a PowerPoint presentation to go to schools and church groups and start to educate people about the nuclear industry and Fukushima especially. The biggest reason I'm so impassioned about this nuclear movement is my little boy is 5 years old, and it's his future, his generation, and I just don't think it's fair to his generation and the thousand after him that have to deal with the waste disposal of all the nuclear spent fuel rods all over the world. Those are going to have to be maintained and guarded for thousands of years, which is going to cost billions of dollars for future generations, which had nothing to do with creating the mess. So that is just not fair, and I think what we need to do is to stop now. And I'm very grateful that we are making some progress. There's been a lot more people aware of what's going on. There's been more people that are starting to protest. Not maybe in this country as much, but it will happen. I feel confident of that.
Hi, I'm Mary Beth Brangen from the Ecological Options Network, EON, and we have a website, eon3.net, E-O-N, the number 3.net, and on there you can get to our blog where we have all our latest information on the issue of ionizing radiation from nuclear, eon3emfblog.net. And we also have an extensive YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/eon3. And then look for the playlist, Nuclear Free Planet. So what I'm grateful for in our movement is the way we act as an ecology, a holistic, integrated, interdependent, complementary ecology with what rises up through each of us as our enthusiasms being the piece of this enormous pushback against the monster that the nuclear issue is, being chosen by each of us on the basis of our enthusiasms and our what we're poised to best address. So it's for the ecological nature of our movement, our anti-nuclear movement, both nationally and internationally. Also, I have James Heddle, my co-director and partner, who also has something that he's grateful for.
Hi, I'm Jim Heddle from the Ecological Options Network, EON. What I'm grateful for is to be alive at a time when there are more activists working at more levels on more issues than at any other time in human history. That gives me great hope that the immune system of the body politic will be adequate to the multiple challenges that we face. Onward and upward.
Did you listen to that litany of successes? Did you hear those hearts? Wasn't that terrific? And lest we forget what it means to succeed, really succeed, here is the sound of the historic moment when the California Coastal Commission announced that it would not grant the permit to allow Pacific Gas and Electric to destroy vast quantities of ocean life with its ill-conceived Diablo Canyon seismic testing plan.
This commission denies the permit application.
That is the sound you do want to hear. That is the sound of our movement winning. Let's get used to it. Let's make a lot more of it because there's much more to come. And I welcome you to join with me, with us, with everyone who's involved in the movement towards nuclear sanity. And here's my final thought, which is about gratitude. My gratitude this Thanksgiving season is for all of you. I was only visiting at Three Mile Island when the nuclear accident happened. When I returned to Los Angeles, there was no context for what I was going through. No one with whom I'd shared the experience and could process all the emotions that resulted. I was a mess. I was isolated in ways I did not understand and could not have any concept of how deeply I'd been hurt. That isolation lasted for 32 years, until 3 months after Fukushima, when some impulse voiced itself to me and said, "You will do your first podcast this Tuesday." By listening to that voice, that impulse, I started on a path that has led me, as of today, to do 75 Nuclear Hot Seat podcasts. In the process, I have gotten to know an amazing community of people. The anti-nuclear activists I have met are among the smartest, strongest, bravest people I have ever known. Yeah, I'm talking to you, you people who are taking the time to listen to this podcast all the way through. I am honored to be part of this movement with you. You are my tribe. I am grateful every day that I'm no longer alone with my nuclear fears. I get to talk about it every week, and a lot of the time in between, within a community that is willing to listen and understand and come back at me with information, support, love, and, at times, a necessary shoulder to cry on. I am not alone. We are not alone. Our numbers are growing, and our successes are accumulating. You just heard all those activists going through the list. We are moving forward, and we will not be stopped. Yes, we who are in the movement for a nuclear-free future represent the ultimate David and Goliath battle. I just wish to remind you once more, David won. We will win. Together. And for that, I am truly grateful. This has been Nuclear Hot Seat for Tuesday, November 20th, 2012. Material for this podcast was gathered from enenews.com, Abalone Alliance Clearinghouse, Roger Harried, Myla Reason with her great videos, Natural Resources News Service, Beyond Nuclear, NEARS.org, the Nuclear Hot Seat Facebook Network, yay! World Nuclear News, my favorite source for the numbnuts on the other side, Japan Times, and XSKF. You can find all our podcasts posted on nuclearhotseat.com/blog, on the Facebook Nuclear Hot Seat pages, and on iTunes Podcasts, where you can subscribe for free. Share us, link to us, post us on your pages, forward us to your email lists. Nuclear Hot Seat is the activist voice on nuclear issues, so use us as the resource we are. And if you have a story lead, a hot tip, or a suggestion of someone to interview, send an email to info@nuclearhotseat.com. Oh, by the way, we're doing Twitter now, too. Finally got that piece of technology worked out. This is Libby Halevi of Heartistry Communications, the heart of the art of communicating, reminding you that we've all had our nuclear wake-up call. Now, do not go back to sleep.